Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, crazy martinis for you as usual. The good and the bad are related to the same story. Jim and I have just finished watching most of Chris Christie's press conference related to his reaction to the story that broke in the Bergen County Record on Wednesday morning about how they had text messages and emails from numerous Christie administration officials suggesting that they were deliberately causing traffic jams on the George Washington Bridge to affect Fort Lee, New Jersey, because the mayor of Fort Lee did not support Chris Christie's reelection. There's good and bad here, because there's good ways that Chris Christie responded to this and bad ways, and we'll try to compartmentalize them here, starting with the good. First of all, the governor seemed to take responsibility. First of all, by getting rid of one of his top officials, his deputy chief of staff. Here's what he said.
There's no justification for ever lying to a governor or a person in authority in this government. And as a result, I've terminated Bridget's employment immediately this morning.
It's Bridget Kelly. She's the deputy chief of staff who is deeply involved in some of those messages that we talked about in yesterday's Three Martini Lunch. Then later in the press conference, Chris Christie saying, I didn't know about any of this, but it's still my responsibility.
Ultimately, I am responsible for what happens under my watch, the good and the bad. And when mistakes are made, then I have to own up to them and take the action that I believe is necessary in order to remediate them.
Well, Jim, we could roll back your comments at the end of yesterday's podcast and point out that he pretty much did exactly what you suggested is the only thing he can do here, assuming that he's telling the truth about him not knowing about any of this, and that's axe anyone who was responsible for it and be extremely contrite about what happened.
Yeah, and that's largely what he did. I think his first 20 to 30 minutes of what has turned into a very long press conference are going to be studied by future public relations and crisis communications managers, because he did it about as well as you can do. Very often when we find a politician's caught in a scandal, there's this mealy-mouthed half phrases and kind of equivocations. They're always, well, it's not that bad, or, oh, I never knew anything, or these people are not really connected to me. There's all kinds of fudgy stretching of the truth. And in this case, Chris Christie did not, downplay what was done and how awful it was. Although a couple of people have noted he seemed a lot more upset about his staff lying to him than he did about the actual, wrecking the commute of thousands of people in Fort Lee. But he made no excuses. He basically made very clear that his staff lied to him and that he had specifically asked his staff, is there anything I should know about this? And he was betrayed by his staff. Now, a lot of people would say that's not my fault. But look, we have very direct, quick accountability here. Bridget Kelly is gone. Bill Stepien, who's considered one of his, he's been a campaign manager for the past two campaigns and one of his trusted aides. He's basically not going to be head of the state party now. And he's asking him to step down from his consulting with the Republican Governors Association. The other thing I really liked, we hear, politicians giving, half mealy-mouthed apologies lately. He says he's going to go to travel to Fort Lee. He's going to apologize to the mayor. Then he'll apologize to the people face-to-face. No issued statements or anything. And so he'll take the slings and arrows that he's got coming to him. And he says he's going to cooperate with state investigations. So all things that he ought to do, the contrast with the president after take your pick over Benghazi, over, Eric Holder in Fast and Furious, the Obamacare rollout and how President Obama is still trying to figure out why he didn't know why there were troubles with the rollout and all that stuff. The contrast is very good for him, but it's not all roses and sunshine down in Trenton today, Greg.
No, that's certainly the case. And as we transition to what he could have done better or just head scratchers in this press conference, we should point out that he walked out there without a note, gave a relatively lengthy statement before taking questions, and did all of this without a prepared statement. In terms of the head scratchers, you mentioned one of them in passing, and that's that he seems far more offended about the fact that his staff lied to him, either directly or indirectly, than the fact that thousands of people were really badly affected by this political stunt carried out by his staff. He did call it stupid and all sorts of other words. At the same time, he kind of distanced himself from, I only have two people who report directly to me, so if anybody underneath that did something on their own, there's no way I could have possibly known about it. Then Not sure that's exactly the image he wants to convey if he wants to be a national figure here.
Yeah, here's what really kind of irks me the most. First of all, if he's lying about any of this, he's toast.
Sure.
Right? I mean, he seems very honest. He's being very direct about this. There isn't a lot of, you know, red flag weasel words. But if any of this turns out to be not true, if Bridget says, oh, yeah, I told him, if there are memos that come forth, email, if anything comes out that suggests Christie did know this, then he is toast. For not only 2016, he may very well end up being, you know, impeached or deal with some sort of legal consequence. Remember, this bridge closure did end up with someone, you know, a woman dying after she was taken to the hospital, and EMS response times were hurt by the massive traffic jam that resulted from all this. I think what's most bothersome, and I mentioned this just recently on Campaign Spot, is that his excuse basically is, look, it's not my fault. It is the fault of terrible, terrible people who I hired and entrusted with public authority. Okay, that's not that reassuring. You know, all you're saying is, look, you're a delegator of a great deal of authority, and you're a terrible judge of character. What could go wrong, right? You know, I mean, I'm glad he's taking action of this. I'm hoping it was only these folks, but you got to wonder, who else is on Christie's staff? And who else is tempted to, you know, you hope that they learn from something like this. But if Christie, I mean, these are people who have been with him for years and years. And if, first of all, the fact that they're willing to lie to the guy who's their boss, who they've been loyal to for all these years, that's a little surprising and unnerving. And you got to wonder, you know, did he tolerate this? Did he, you know, encourage this? Was there this mixed signals being sent about whether this kind of vindictiveness was okay? Christie says he's undergone some soul searching, but, I just seems... kind of unnerving that this kind of stuff could go on and under Christie's nose and him not know about it. And, you know, think about it. He spent the last 2 months basically poo-pooing this and saying that this was all partisan games. This was all nonsense. There was, you know, no real scandal here. And now we find out, no, there was a real scandal here. So his credibility has taken a shot, and people will kind of always be wondering, is he fully in the loop, or does he have, you know, these staffers who are perfectly happy to do bad things to help him and then keep him in the dark about it?
Well, I assume the modus operandi for most conservatives right now is a waiting game to see if anything else comes out of this investigation before we start jumping on or off the train for 2016, correct?
Probably. People who hate Christie will jump on, you know, will see this as front and center in his defining moment. People who love him will insist it's no big deal. People on Twitter continue to insist it's not a big, you know, it's not important, and that you're a lunatic if you're concerned about this. I think this is troubling. It's not, you know, and I think the way he's handled it is generally good. I think he's done his very best once all this came to light. I mean, it just assumes he cooperates fully with that investigation, and I hope they get down to the bottom of this, is who came up with the idea, who knew, how many people were in the loop on this, and how many people chose not to tell Christie this was going on. I mean, one of the things that's really kind of creepy about this is that in these messages we're reading about, it's time for Fort Lee to have some problems. And, you know, one person says, I guess I feel bad for the kids stuck on school buses, stuck on, you know, the first day of school. I mean, these are psychopathic people, Greg. These are really terrible people that, you know, Kirstie surrounded himself with. So he might be this big, lovable teddy bear of a governor, but if he has a habit of trusting the wrong people, that's kind of an unnerving development for a guy who might want to be president of the United States someday.
On to martini number three now. And as long as we're talking about deceit, let's go to Colorado Senator Mark Udall. This comes to us from Breitbart.com. CompleteColorado.com reports emails that show U.S. Senator Mark Udall, who's up for re-election this year, by the way, that his office pressured the Colorado Division of Insurance to downplay the number of insurance cancellations caused by the rollout of Obamacare. A full 249,199 Colorado citizens were victimized by Obamacare cancellations. According to the emails, Udall's office had hoped to change the definition of a cancellation as a way to lower the number. And this is the email from the Director of External Affairs, Joe Donilon, at the Colorado Division of Insurance. Senator Udall says our numbers were wrong. They are not wrong. Cancellation notices affected 249,199 people. They want to trash our numbers. I'm holding strong while we get more details. Many have already done early renewals. Regardless, they received cancellation notices. So it appears that Udall didn't want to count the people who were forced to enroll into the exchanges after they canceled their individual plans. So, Jim, not sure how much traction this will get, but polls already show Udall in trouble. So in a state that's getting purpler or maybe even redder given the recent gun votes there, This could be good news for Republicans, but shows that Democrats on this issue once again looking to do just about anything to make the numbers look better.
The contrast here is useful, and we on the right can be, you know, justifiably irked that this is not going to get the national attention that the Christie thing does. You can argue about, you know, just the scale of the sins. But look, you know, when the state comes out with data about who's, you know, who's got insurance and who's not got insurance, they're not supposed to be spun, they're not supposed to be tweaked or massage the numbers or anything. And that's what Udall is calling for here. You know, it's causing political embarrassment for him, and he wants the state to stop doing this. Stop, you know, change your numbers. This, I guess the real question here is, does this get attention in Colorado? And this is perhaps a good test. You know, we talked about the textbook example Christie was providing of taking account, responsibility and being accountable. This is the opposite of that. This is Udall basically saying, I don't want to be accountable for the consequences of Obamacare and all these people losing the insurance. So basically, state government, whose job is to count the numbers, help me cover it up. Help me, you know, blur what's clear, and let me, you know, if I don't like the numbers you're putting out, so change them. And if this doesn't represent kind of an unnerving attitude towards authority on the part of a U.S. senator, I'm not sure what does. But there we go. And I hope, you know, the only thing we can say is we hope Colorado voters notice this and think hard about whether this is the kind of guy they want representing them in the U.S. Senate.
He was elected in a Democratic wave in 08. We'll see if he stays in 2014, which does not appear to be shaping up as a Democratic wave, to say the least. So, Jim, great to be with you as always. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And please join us on Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.